The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Orson Welles is your host and narrator for an episode of the Black Museum, and Luella Parsons presents news from Hollywood from 1950 with her guest, Shelley Winters. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Luella Parsons presents news from Hollywood from 1950 with her guest, Shelley Winters. Right now, here's an episode of the Black Museum entitled The 22 Caliber Pistol. Host and narrator is Orson Welles as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
This is Orson Welles speaking from London.
Black Museum, the repository of death. Yes, here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a skillet, a screwdriver, a photograph, all are touched by murder. Here's a 22 caliber pistol. It's a familiar object. You've seen one or its picture. You've never touched one. An elegant little weapon. Blue steel. Mother of pearl inlaid grip. Beautiful in its dainty, snub-nosed wickedness.
A lady's weapon, wouldn't you say, Pepper?
Looks as if it wouldn't harm a fly. Pretty in its way, Inspector.
Pretty and dangerous. There ought to be a law forbidding the manufacture of these toys. Every one of them is capable of death.
Well, today, this little blue 22 can be found among the exhibits in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Headache, neuritis, or neuralgia pains, quickly try Anacin. The relief it brings is incredibly fast. Here's why. Anacin is made like a doctor's prescription, contains not just one, but a combination of medically active and proved ingredients. Get Anacin from your druggist, an easy-to-take tablet form. Keep it handy. And then next time you have a headache pain or suffer pain of neuritis or neuralgia, take Anacin tablets. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Now, The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
Welles. Here we are, in the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. It's an impressive place. The kind of echoing awe which comes from a vaulted ceiling and somber lighting. Weird, fantastic, with a harsh, real fantasy that comes with murder. Here lies death, and so neatly. Each object placarded with a small white card labeled with black lettering, name, place, date, disposition of the case. Here's an odd-looking ashtray, soapstone. It's carved rather nicely with a crouching figure of a woman. Something decorative for your living room, but observe closely now the red-brown stain on the rim. Lift up the tray, hold it by the figure of the woman. Oh, yes, it's comfortable in your hand, and suddenly, this is a weapon. Ah, here we are, the little blue 22. Well, it's silent now. It was silent, too, during Vivian Davis's cocktail party in London's smart, sophisticated West End. In Vivian's quite chichy apartment, it was not destined to be silent, though. Not very long. It's a nice place, Vivian's apartment, if you go for ultra-modern glass and metal combinations. Nice people, too. Well, nice looking, anyway. Young men are quite impeccable. The young ladies are lovely, lush, well aware of the well-put-together attractiveness. Oh, yes, these are the chic young people.
Larry, darling, have you been watching Vivian and Donald?
What else, sweet? They are at dagger points, aren't they?
Well, frankly, Larry, if Viv has one more martini, she'll kill Donald with a look.
An alcoholic look, at any rate. But why all the fuss and bother? If Donald wants to play, she ought to let him. I know at least three males were perfectly willing to give Viv a time, really.
Mm-hmm. Including yourself, Larry, my sweet?
No, darling, I'm the fourth. But then why bother?
A trifle strange, isn't it? The ultra-sophisticated, the over-civilized, and yet, you know, beneath the polish, the same old jealousy that you can find in savages. Oh, yes, simple jealousy. For instance, at this moment, Vivian herself is approaching the chrome and plastic bar where Donald is mixing a drink.
Donald, haven't you had enough? You're quite tight, you know.
Am I, really?
I asked you, Donald, haven't you had enough?
I don't believe I have. Will you have one, dear?
I've had enough, let me tell you. This is my party. You might be polite enough to pay some attention to me and a little less to that strawberry blonde.
Ah, she's quite attractive in a leggy sort of way.
Oh, yes, quite elemental beneath the polished surface. An interesting situation. It continues, of course, as long as the party lasts. It continues, as a matter of fact, well past the end of the party, even to the moment when May and Larry are making their farewells, the last of the guests to go.
Oh, it was simply marvelous, Viv, darling. Just delightful.
I always adore your parties, Viv. The liquor flows like water.
Oh, thank you both for coming. My little parties wouldn't be the same without you. Isn't that so, Donald?
Huh? Yes, yes, of course.
Coming, Donald Osam?
Well, I don't exactly
know. Oh, Larry, please.
What? Oh, put my foot in it, haven't I? I'm sorry, old man. Au revoir, Viv. Let the martinis run again sometime soon.
Bye, darling. Ring me, won't you?
Oh, soon, darling. Quite soon.
Donald's for it now. Did you see the look in her eye?
Come along, dear. Don't be catty.
Oh, I don't know.
The party's over now. Silence descends on the carpeted hallway for a moment or two. And then, through the muffling walls...
You stupid little, silly little beast on that woman.
Oh, stop it, Viv. I'm not interested in her. I've told you
time and time again. Don't you make me look like a perfect
idiot. Man versus woman. A jealous woman. Where does it go? Isn't it obvious? Of course. Somebody's bound to be hurt. Inspector Summers and Detective Pepper arrive quickly from the yard.
This seems to be the weapon, Inspector. A 22. Blue steel, mother of pearl grip.
A lady's weapon, wouldn't you say, Pepper?
Looks as if it wouldn't harm a fly. Pretty in its way, Inspector.
Pretty and dangerous. There ought to be a law forbidding the manufacture of these toys. Every one of them is capable of death.
Funny.
What is?
The body, out here. On the landing.
Yes. Well, we'll find the reason for that shortly. Not much blood. 22s don't make much of a hole. Stay here, Pepper. I want the pathologist to see the body before it goes to the morgue. You know the procedure. I'll be inside with the prime and only suspect.
Yes, sir. I understand.
All right. Tell me how it happened.
Don't you dare to talk to me like that.
Take hold of yourself, Miss Davis. I need the answers to a few questions. I'll answer that.
Don't you dare. That's my telephone.
Yes? No. This is Inspector Summers of Scotland Yard. I see. I'm sorry, Lady Munsey. You can't speak to your daughter just now. Yes. She'll be coming down to the yard. You can come there if you wish. Goodbye.
Now will you leave me alone? You know who my mother is.
Which do you prefer, to answer my questions here or to come down to the yard?
I refuse to answer anything.
That won't look well in the report, miss.
Oh, get out of here. Get out.
Take hold of yourself, Miss Davis.
I've told you and told you. Donald and I were arguing. I suppose I grabbed the gun from under the pillow where I keep it. He tried to take it away from me. And next I knew there was a shot and he was mumbling something about a doctor. And then he was dead. No, now leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Inspector Summers felt that further questioning was indicated. The location he chose was his own office at the yard.
Where did you get the gun, Miss Davis?
My husband gave it to me several years ago.
Are you married?
I was. I'm divorced.
Inspector Summers thought of many questions.
Where did you struggle over the gun?
In the bedroom.
I see. Why do you use linoleum for a floor covering in the bedroom?
Oh, because it's easy to keep clean and because it's chic and because... Oh, what has that to do with Donald?
I'm asking the questions, Miss Davis.
Oh, yes, there were many, many questions.
How long have you lived at that address? How long did you know Donald Martin? Have you ever bought any ammunition for that gun? What were you quarreling about?
It went on and on. And finally...
Very well, Miss Davis. We shan't hold you. But don't leave London. And your mother is waiting for you. You better go home with her. We're sealing your apartment.
An inconvenient matter, violent death from a gunshot wound. Apartments are sealed, people investigate. One's whole life is turned inside out. And then there are the experts.
The scientific facts contradict some of Miss Davis's statements, Inspector.
They do? For instance?
There's no evidence of any scorching of the clothing round the bullet hole. From that fact and the spread of the smoke stain, I deduce that the gun was held from 3 to 6 inches from Martin's chest. As the blood ran down the chest, he must have been standing at the time. It would be practically impossible for him to hold the weapon himself in that position.
Could he have clutched the barrel, say, in an attempt to take it away from Miss Davis?
In that case, his fingers would be singed, or at least blackened. They're not. I do not believe that the man was touching the weapon at all when it was fired.
An embarrassing conclusion, to say the least. There were other things.
I've checked Martin's shoes at the morgue, Inspector.
Well?
If they struggled in that bedroom, on that polished linoleum floor, his shoes would have had to scratch the floor. They're leather-soled, and they have metal taps on the tips.
Very good. Another discrepancy. Now, Pepper, I think we'd better have a bit of a talk with the neighbors. Are you certain of that, Mrs. Merritt?
I am positive. It's not the first time they yelled at each other, those two. And the walls are thin.
Do you have it down, Pepper?
Yes, sir. They had a quarrel about 2 weeks ago. He left. She leaned out of the window, only half-dressed, and shouted at him, "Laugh, baby, laugh for the last time." And then she fired a gun at him.
Thank you. Now then, Mrs. Merritt, before the shot last night, did you catch any of the words they said?
His? Oh, no, sir. But, well, her bedroom is next to mine. And I heard her say, as clear as day, and at the top of her lungs, I will kill you.
Thank you, Mrs. Merritt. Anything else?
No, sir.
Very well. Let's go, Pepper. All right, Pepper. I think we have the makings of a case. Pick her up. We'll book her for willful murder.
And today, the little blue 22, which was to play such an important part in the case, can be seen among the other exhibits in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with the Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Plug check. It's time for a change of oil and grease, antifreeze.
And check those important spark plugs, too.
Because they're the heart of your car's ignition system. And when they're right, your chances of starting, even in the coldest weather, are better than ever. If replacements are needed, your Autolite spark plug dealer will recommend Autolite resistor or standard type spark plugs. Both are ignition engineered, and both are original equipment on many makes of our finest cars. By the way, the Autolite resistor spark plug, with its exclusive built-in resistor, permits a wider gap setting, which makes possible advantages such as smoother engine performance, quick starts, and double spark plug life.
So winterize right now. Please do. And check those important spark plugs, too.
At your nearest Autolite spark plug dealers. And remember, from bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
As the inspector said, they felt they had a case. The evidence was piling up. Vivian Davis was arrested. Her defense counsel was a distinguished member of the bar, and the prosecutor assigned was no less brilliant. But some of the conversation about the case was a lot less brilliant.
Why, if Larry and I had stayed, we might have seen the whole thing. And darling, those letters. Imagine leaving letters like that lying in your bureau drawer, where anyone might find them. And do you suppose the prosecution will use them for evidence? This is one trial I simply shall not miss.
Let me say here and now, if May owns a gun, I'm walking out, and at once. But Viv always was unstable, you know. That's the kind who'll pull a gun on you when you least expect it. Not for me, old man. Not for me.
I always said she was no better than you'd think. Wild parties at all hours, firing guns around, drinking. Oh, I dare say the woman wasn't happy. But then who is? Now I ask you, who is?
Poor Viv. I understand the food in prison is all starches.
Seen the headlines? This is a juicy one, what?
Aren't you a witness? You don't say. Really now, you don't say.
They tried the case in public gossip long before it came to proper trial. And when the proper trial began, the courtroom was crowded naturally with bright young women and polished young men, the familiars of the defendant. This, however, failed to ruffle the solemnity of a British court.
I shall permit no demonstrations. At the least lapse from proper decorum, I shall have the courtroom cleared.
And that settled that. The trial proceeded. Vivian Davis, in simple black, sat in the dock between the two wardresses assigned to guard her. On the witness stand, the pathologist repeated his evidence and his conclusions with the prosecution. There was no cross-examination. With Inspector Summers, it was another matter.
Inspector, you heard the prison doctor testify that when Miss Davis was admitted to the prison after her arrest, he found bruises on her arms and on one thigh.
Yes, sir.
And that such bruises might have been sustained in a struggle.
Yes, sir.
Very well. Now then, in your experience, have you found that when one person handles a gun, that person's fingerprints are usually found on the weapon?
That has been my experience.
However, if two parties struggled for possession of a certain weapon, would there be fingerprints?
In most cases, no, sir. They tend to smudge or eliminate each other's prints.
This weapon, which you've identified and which has been entered in evidence as Exhibit A, did you find this weapon at the scene of the alleged crime?
I did.
Did you examine it carefully?
I did.
Did you have it tested for fingerprints?
I did.
Did you find any?
Yes, sir.
How many sets?
Only one set of prints were on that gun.
Whose were they, Inspector? Now tell the jury, please, whose fingerprints were on that gun?
Only my own.
One more point, Inspector. You stated that you found a bullet in the wall of the bedroom. Correct?
Yes, sir.
Have you any reason to believe this bullet was fired on the night of the alleged crime?
It could have been fired at any time, I suppose.
Thank you, Inspector. That's all.
Mrs. Merritt, the eager next-door neighbor, had her proverbial day in court.
Yes, sir. Just as I told the inspector, she screamed at him, hanging out of the window only half-dressed, and then she fired a shot at him.
Counsel for the defense spent little time in the cross-examination of Mrs. Merritt.
Madam, did you actually see Miss Davis fire a pistol or gun of some sort at the deceased?
I heard the shot after she yelled at him.
You said she was only half-dressed at the time. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Then you must have seen her.
Well, I took one look, and after that I only listened.
Why? Why, Mrs. Merritt?
When a woman is in her condition, no other woman cares to watch her.
I see. This is your opinion.
It certainly is.
Your Lordship, I respectfully request that the answers to the last two questions be stricken from the record as constituting an opinion and not evidence. Further, on the grounds that opinions are not warranted, as the witness is not qualified as an expert.
Well,
the clerk will strike the last two answers from the record, and the jury is instructed to ignore the testimony. Proceed.
No further questions. Thank you, Mrs. Merritt.
Back and forth, the battle raged, a battle for a woman's life. The case for the Crown was ably presented. The defense, by cross-examination, by objections in the record, sought to upset testimony to establish points which could be played upon later, the climax of the trial, when Vivian Davis herself took the stand in her own defense.
Now, Miss Davis, you understand the seriousness of this situation.
Of course.
I refer to the testimony that you once fired a gun at Donald Martin from your bedroom window. Is this true?
No, it's not true.
What did happen that evening?
He'd come to see me. He'd asked me for money to pay a gambling debt, and I refused. We quarreled, and he left. I was furious, and I called to him from my window. Then I went back into the room and fired one shot to make him think I'd killed myself.
What happened then?
Oh, Donald. Mr. Martin came rushing back, and we were friends again.
Miss Davis, have you ever pointed a weapon at Mr. Martin?
No, never.
Have you wanted to?
No, never.
Did you shoot him the night he died?
No!
Have you any recollection of his having spoken to you between the time he was shot and the moment he died?
I'll never forget it as long as I live.
What did he say?
He said, I wish the doctor would hurry. I want to tell him that this was an accident. It's not your fault. He said it over and over. And then he was dead.
Thank you, Miss Davis. Your witness.
Pull yourself together, Miss Davis.
Yes, sir.
Very well. I submit, Miss Davis, that the truth of your first public quarrel is as it was stated by a previous witness. That you did fire out of your window at Mr. Martin.
Oh, no, never. I fired in the room. I wanted to frighten him.
Miss Davis, is this your pistol?
Yes.
Is this the weapon which killed Mr. Martin?
Yes.
And on the night this gun, your gun, killed Mr. Martin, you had a quarrel, a second quarrel.
Yes.
You were, to put it simply, jealous of his behavior with other women.
Oh, I was so jealous, I threatened to kill myself.
You threatened to kill yourself?
Yes.
Then why did you shout, I will kill you?
No, I never said that.
What did you say, Miss Davis?
I may have said I'll shoot myself. The other, I never said. Why should I? I was jealous, but that was because I loved him. Oh, you've got to believe me. I loved him. I did.
There was more, much more, over and over. But they never managed to shake her on the essential points.
I never pointed a gun at Donald in my life.
And, of course...
I never said I'd kill him. I said I'd kill myself.
At long last, with Vivian Davis on the verge of collapse, the prosecutor let her go. Shortly thereafter, the defense rested. Summations were brief. For the prosecution...
This woman is guilty of the crime with which she is charged. There is no doubt in our minds, nor should there be any in yours, that she held the pistol and fired the shot.
For the defense?
It is clear that no woman kills the man she loves, despite the violence of their causes. This was an accident. It is clear that it was an accident.
The presiding justice was clear and concise in his charge to the jury.
The gentlemen of the jury, in conclusion... Let me advise you, there are three possible verdicts you may return under the present indictment. Guilty of murder, guilty of manslaughter, or not guilty of any offense. I commend the accused to your most painstaking deliberations.
The jury filed out. They stayed out for two long, weary hours. There was chatter in the courtroom. There always is. But even the gossip was subdued. Everybody waited. Waited.
It seems perfectly incredible. A murder trial, and I've been in on it since the beginning. Well, I do hope the judge wasn't as much against her as he seemed to be.
It was really too exciting for words. I've had more dinner invitations because I know Viv. Oh, well, after all, the poor girl might be hanged, you know. Oh, grisly thought.
Well, for my part, even if she gets off, there'll be one advantage. She'll never be my neighbor again, and that will be an improvement, I'd say.
And at long last, the waiting was over. The prisoner arose in the dock, the judge's request. The foreman of the jury faced the prisoner in the court. The age-old formula was intoned by the clerk.
Members of the jury, have you agreed upon a verdict?
We have.
Do you find the prisoner guilty or not guilty of murder?
Not guilty.
Do you find the prisoner guilty or not guilty of manslaughter?
Not guilty.
Yet, despite that verdict, the little blue 22 can be seen today among the exhibits in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
Thank you.
Now here in person is Orson Welles.
Yes, they let Vivian Davis go free. In many minds, the question was, and still is, did Vivian Davis get away with murder? Frankly, I don't believe anyone gets away with murder. Murder stays with the killer, twisting mind and heart and soul, even in the unsuspected and therefore unsolved cases. Where Vivian Davis was concerned, perhaps the real crime was insecurity and the kind of violent jealousy that grows from fear. I don't know. That's for the psychologists, not for you and I to decide. Meanwhile, the little blue 22 remains in its customary place in Scotland Yard, in the Black Museum. And now, until we meet again next time, in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring Orson Welles as your host and narrator for an episode of The Black Museum. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Luella Parsons presents News from Hollywood with her guest Shelley Winters from 1950 as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
She's walking down the aisle, another Woodbury bride. She uses Woodbury soap because it's gentle and mild. And her hands are smooth and lovable from Jergens Lotion Care.
It's the lotion that's preferred
by more women everywhere.
Jergens Lotion and Woodbury Soap present the Luella Parsons Show.
What famous band leader tried to end it all last night?
What glamorous star is in big income tax trouble?
What movie queen expects a marriage proposal from a British nobleman?
Luella will give you the answers and also interview Shelley Winters, who will tell you about artistic temperament in Hollywood. Brought to you transcribed by Jergens Lotion and Woodbury Facial Soap. And now your Jergens Woodbury reporter, Luella Parsons.
Hello from Hollywood to all of you, my first exclusive. H.E.O. Pinza will be singing Some Enchanted Evening to a new little Pinza in December. He and his wife expect their third child in time for Christmas. The population of MGM is certainly on the increase, with Lana Turner, Pinza's co-star, Esther Williams, June Allison, and Sid Cerise all on the expected list. My second exclusive. Late this year, Kirk Douglas will marry Irene Reisman McAvoy. Irene's father, oil millionaire Charles Reisman, cannot say that Kirk is marrying the beautiful Irene for her money, as he did when his other daughter, Charlene, married Helmut Dantin. Kirk has paid $150,000 per picture, which doesn't exactly put him on the breadline. Last night, police were called to the home of Charlie Burnett by his wife, who said he had swallowed sleeping pills in an attempt to end his life. She had earlier reported that he tried to shoot himself. He had come to Hollywood to try for a reconciliation, and it failed. Tomorrow, Barney Balaban, president of Paramount, will announce that Y. Frank Freeman, Paramount executive, will permanently head Paramount production, effective July 15th. The government claims Rita Hayworth and Orson Welles owe $250,000 in back taxes. The debt was incurred when Rita was married to Welles. He claimed loss on his flop play Around the World, which Uncle Sam does not agree is deductible. Through her attorneys, however, Rita will present her own case in Washington August 7th. August 6th has been set as the date for the marriage of Betty Davis's ex-husband, William Grant Cherry, to 23-year-old Marion Richards, their daughter's nurse. And there's quite a story back of it. Betty knew nothing about their romance until Marion said she was leaving to become Cherry's bride. Then Betty was furious because she had given Cherry her Laguna Beach house, and that's where the bride and groom will live. Speaking of Betty Davis, since it's been said that she's going to marry Gary Merrill, some of the theater owners have given Gary star billing and put his name in electric lights. Not bad. Dorothy L'Amour will undergo an operation tomorrow morning for an internal disorder. She was taken to the operating room Thursday, the day she returned from Europe, but the doctors decided she was not strong enough to stand surgery then. Here's wishing her all the luck in the world. The two happiest people I know are Eddie Albert and Margot. After 4 years of marriage, they expect their first child in February. They're returning to Hollywood as soon as Eddie finishes his New York commitments. I received some personal information yesterday right from Tokyo when George Braxton, who is making a motion picture there, telephoned me. He said while there doesn't seem to be any hysteria over the Korean situation, the Japanese are very fearful of a communist invasion, such as happened in China. He said they all look to General MacArthur and the United States to save them. Braxton said that he had visited Japan before the war, and today people have more jobs and better pay, which they attribute to General MacArthur. The swing and sway man, Sammy Kay, has filed suit in New York's federal court against a network, not this one, for $400,000. He claims the network swiped his idea for one of their radio shows. Helen Holmes, well known to the older generation, serial queen of the silent movies, whose Hazards of Helen made history, died last night of a heart attack at the age of 58. Helen was with the old Kalem Company, and her favorite stunt was being tied in front of an onrushing locomotive and getting saved at the last split second. Joe Frisco, who made horse racing his great love, when Lorraine McDermott, his dancing partner, married another man, may now give up the races. Lorraine, who is now free, gets here Tuesday, and Frisco will again woo her. Frau Rommel, wife of the famous Nazi general, was visited in her home in Germany a few days ago by Nolly Johnson. Johnson, who is writing The Desert Fox, a story of General Erwin Rommel in Africa for Daryl Zanuck, was seeking factual data. There is no thought, however, of glorifying Rommel through the movies, and this I'm very glad to say. When Gussie Moran flies into New York tomorrow, she'll be minus her famous pigtails. I'll say for Gussie, there's never a dull moment with her. Last year, her lace panties were front page. I agree with some of Gussie's Hollywood friends. If she'd pay less attention to all this publicity and get down to playing tennis, she might have more chance of winning the championship. Yesterday, a package with a roll of film inside was delivered on the set of Born Yesterday to Judy Holliday from her husband, George Oppenheim. With a note saying, "I bought this for you, honey." When Judy ran the film, it showed a beautiful colonial house, interior and exterior. The last shot was of Oppenheim holding a blackboard on which was written, "It's at Monroe, New York, ready for you when you finish the picture. Hope you like it." Well, that's some husband. A little sister to Newsweek magazine called People Today, and on the same order as the successful Quick magazine, made its debut with a cover of Ava Gardner captioned Sleepy Time Gale. On the inside is an article which reviews Ava's career from the age of four until now. That should certainly wake up circulation. And now, Marvin Miller.
How would you like to have beautiful hands at the flick of your finger? That's how easy it is with the new Jergens Lotion Dispenser. Just press the dispenser with your fingertip, and out comes enough Jergens lotion for a soothing, smoothing application. You'll get this dispenser when you buy a 50-cent bottle of Jergens lotion. Both cost you only 45 cents plus tax.
She uses Jergens lotion. It's so perfect for hands. Stars use it 7 to 1, 'cause Jergens lotion's so grand. Let your hands be smooth and lovable from Jergens lotion care.
It's the lotion that's preferred
by more women everywhere.
And here is the talk of the town.
This evening, my guest is a blazing blonde from Universal International, whose first test as a newcomer I saw in a projection room 3 years ago. I said then that girl would be a star. Well, we've heard from her plenty since that day. She's climbed from an absolute unknown to co-starring with Jimmy Stewart in Winchester 73. Her name is Shelley Winters. Greetings, Shelley. How's my good friend tonight?
Fine, Luella. You know, you don't always sweet-talk me that way.
Shelley, you're like the little girl with the curl. When you're good, you're very, very good. But when you're bad, you're a headache.
But, Luella, you've got to admit, I'm never dull coffee. With me, everything is either way down in the dumps or else it's razzle-dazzle.
Now, wait a minute, Shelley. There are a couple of questions I'd like you to answer.
Okay. What about?
Well, mostly about your being temperamental.
Well, Luella, since you've beat me over the headline so many times about it, I brought the answer to that one with me. Although it might be a little immodest of me to admit it, I am temperamental.
Immodest?
It says in the dictionary, and I quote, "Temperament, disinclination to submit to ordinary rules or restraint, a common accompaniment of genius or artistic ability."
Well, you certainly know your dictionary. But, Miss Genius, I shouldn't laugh at you on the subject of temperament. You've been a naughty girl and you know it. Walking out of scenes and generally blowing your top. Shelley, why do you do it?
Well, truthfully, Luella, I've learned from some of the greatest directors in this industry that acting in the movies is only good when it's absolutely real and not acting in the sense of making believe. I've yet to learn how to turn my emotions off once they get started. The incident you're referring to is a scene where I had a cry, and I cried so hard I couldn't stop, and my eyes were all swollen, and they couldn't photograph me in the next scene.
But what about the little moment on Winchester 73, when you upset a whole wagon, a team of horses, and Jimmy Stewart, just to get your own way?
Well, I guess I was wrong that time, Luella. Jimmy Stewart was an absolute dreamboat about it. Did you know about that, too?
Of course I knew about it. I'm a newspaper reporter, remember? But come on, how are you going to explain this one?
Well, Luella, we started the scene, and I sat at a rather unfavorable angle to the camera, so I asked the director why I couldn't change places with Jimmy. He said Jimmy had to sit on that side of the buckboard to drive the team. I said, why can't I switch places and drive? The director said no, but Jimmy said, let's try it. So we switched. The horses took off and ran away. And then they really ran away, and we spilled over in the close-up, and I landed headfirst in the mud, and as I picked myself up, Jimmy Stewart said, well, Shelley, did you get your best angle photographed?
Shelley, I'll say for you, you're always colorful. And you're such a sharp operator, you probably know it never hurt any girl at the box office to cause plenty of excitement.
I know it, Luella, but with me, it's just doing what comes naturally. ask my father.
I don't know your father, so I'll just ask you.
Well, when I was 11, I decided to become an actress. I dragged my father and family away from St. Louis, Missouri, to New York so I could go on the stage. When I was 20, I dragged them away from New York to Hollywood so I could go into pictures. But the payoff came the other day when I casually mentioned I'd like to make some pictures in Europe. Pop groaned and said, "Oh, no, Shelley, I'm too old to go live in a foreign country."
Well, I'll bet Farley Granger wouldn't like that any better than your dad.
Oh, I don't know. I think Farley would have just as much fun fighting with me in Europe as in America. Luella, may I say something?
Well, considering that you've been so silent up to this moment, I guess you can.
Well, seriously, I want to say to every kid who dreams of an acting career, if you really think you've got it, don't give up. Don't let anyone discourage you. I nearly died when I couldn't even get the understudy role in Barn Yesterday. But because I tried so hard for it, Garson Kanin, who wrote it, remembered me and recommended me to George Cukor, who tested me for the role in A Double Life.
And you got the role. That's a test I saw 3 years ago.
Luella, I wouldn't want this to get back to any producer. But most of us would work for nothing to be in a great picture. And when we do get a great part, we give everything that's in us. Maybe that's being temperamental.
Shelley, I've got a surprise for you. I'm beginning to see your point. For the first time, I understand, you are all the time struggling to improve your performance. And if that's temperament, maybe that's why you've climbed to the top. Good night, and thank you for being here. And now, here's Marvin Miller to report a very special Woodbury Deb wedding.
Lovely Patricia Dillon knew she'd be in the public eye when she married James Farley, Jr., and Pat thanked Woodbury Soap for guarding her delicate complexion. She said,
"Woodbury's gentle lather smooths my skin and keeps it free of rough, red skin burn."
Skin specialists make Woodbury Soap with a skin-smoothing ingredient found in fine face creams. Your complexion can be beautifully smooth and fresher, too, with Woodbury Care.
She's walking down the aisle, another Woodbury bride. She uses Woodbury soap because it's gentle and mild. It has a beauty cream ingredient, you like it all so much.
Ask for Woodbury soap
and have the skin you love to touch.
And here is last minute news.
It's a boy for Jane Withers, former child star, and her husband, movie producer William Moss. It was born just an hour ago. Joan Blondell is in Santa Monica Hospital suffering with a bad sinus attack. Ruby Dee, who played Jackie Robinson's wife in his life story, and her husband, Ossie Davis, are expecting their first baby in September. The Earl of Warwick is on his way to the United States to see Paulette Goddard, with marriage on his mind. It's a boy for Dick Stabile, conductor of the Martin and Lewis Orchestra. He's naming the baby Martin Lewis Stabile after his comedy bosses. Early this morning, Jane Russell's brother Jamie welcomed a 6-pound baby girl. Jamie is married to Pamela Novak, daughter of Eva Novak, once William Hart's leading lady. Mary Astor's husband, Thomas Wheelock, is in St. Joseph's Hospital for an emergency appendix operation. And now, Marvin Miller.
You know how attractive a golden suntan is against your light summer dresses? By tomorrow night, you can be a gorgeous golden color. Just stop at your favorite cosmetic counter for Woodbury's wonderful Dream Stuff in the Tropic Tan shade. Dream Stuff is a tinted foundation and powder in one handy cake. It smooths on with a puff, and there's no powdery look. Dream Stuff in 4 glorious shades is only 49 cents plus tax.
This is Luella Parsons saying, that's all for tonight. But I'll see you next Sunday, when my guest will be that popular MGM star, Esther Williams.
This program was transcribed. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Who cares for starlit skies? When you were alone, the magic moonlight dies. At the break of dawn, there's no sunrise. When your lover has gone, when your lover has gone, when your lover has gone, what lonely hours. The evening shadows fall. What lonely hours, with memory lingering like faded flowers. Life can't mean a thing, baby, baby. Oh, baby, baby, when your lover's gone.
Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. Louis Armstrong and his orchestra with When Your Lover Has Gone from 1931. We also heard the Luella Parsons Show with her guest Shelley Winters, first broadcast on ABC Radio on July 9th, 1950. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.